The Torah tells us that the tribes of Reuben and Gad, B'nei Gad and B'nei Reuben, came to Moshe Rabbeinu and they wanted to inherit their part of Eretz Yisrael. They wanted to take on the east bank of the Jordan. At first, Moshe Rabbeinu was upset with that suggestion, but after they explained that they will be the ones that will go first in the battles to fight the wars of conquering Eretz Canaan, Moshe Rabbeinu agreed to give them those lands. And the reason they wanted those lands was because they had a lot of livestock, they had a lot of cattle and sheep, and that was very good grazing land for their cattle. We also find that the tribe of Manasseh, half of the tribe inherited the land on the east bank of the Jordan, and the other half inherited the land in Eretz Canaan. That means that Manasseh inherited the land on both sides of the Jordan River. The reason that the B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuben took their land on the east bank of the Jordan was, as we mentioned before, because that land was good grazing land for their cattle, and they had a lot of livestock. Why did specifically B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuben have a lot of livestock? So it's explained in Sfarim that Yaakov Avinu had a lot of livestock. Reuben, who was the firstborn of Yaakov, and the firstborn, the Torah tells us, inherits a double portion. He inherits twice as much as his siblings. So Reuben inherited from Yaakov twice as much as his brothers. So that is the reason why he had so much more livestock. God had a lot of livestock, a lot of cattle. Is explained in Svarim that God was very fond of the man. In fact, this is hinted in the Pasuk. When the Pasuk speaks about the man, the Pasuk says, "V'haman kezera gad hu," that the man was like Zera God. That also the name of God is associated with the man. And being that they were fond of the man, this was their primary food, and they did not slaughter as much cattle. They didn't eat that much meat, and as a result of that, they had more livestock than the other tribes. So by these two Shvatim, by these two tribes of Gad and Reuben, we find this explanation that they wanted to have the land which is good grazing land for their cattle. However, by Manasseh we did not find any indication that he had a lot of livestock. What is the reason that Manasseh inherited land on both sides of the Jordan, also in Eretz Canaan and also on the east bank of the Jordan? Manasseh had an altogether different reason. Manasseh wanted the inheritance of the promised land that he took then. When the Jews entered Eretz Canaan with Yehoshua, he wanted it to be as similar as possible to the Gula HaAsida, to the ultimate redemption which will come through Mashiach. What is the difference between the redemption which comes through Mashiach and inheriting the land which the Jews inherited when they entered Eretz Yisrael? The difference is this. When God promised Avraham Avinu that he will give these lands to the Jewish people, God says to him, "To your descendants I will give these lands." God also says that he will give the lands of the Keni, Kenizi, and Kadmeni. The areas of Keni, Kenizi, and Kadmeni is referring to Amen and Meyov. The lands of Amen and Meyov, the Jews did not inherit when they entered Eretz Canaan the first time. When the Jewish people entered the land of Canaan with Yeshua, they inherited only the lands of the seven nations. They never inherited the lands of all the ten nations. This will happen when Mashiach comes. Up until when Mashiach comes, the Jews never inherited those lands. In fact, the Rambam, when he explains in Hilchas Melech HaMashiach, he explains the source in the Torah where do we see that the Torah speaks about Mashiach. So the Rambam brings as a proof that when the Jews will inherit the lands of Keni, Knizi, and Kadmeni, they will have to add more Ari Miklat, more cities of refuge. And that has never happened. And being that this is a mitzvah in the Torah, this has to happen literally and physically. It can't be a metaphor. It cannot be an analogy. So therefore, the Rambam explains, this is proof that there will come a time when Mashiach will come, the Jews will be redeemed, and then they will inherit these three lands of Keni, Knizi, and Kadmeni, in addition to the seven lands which they already had before, and then will be applied the mitzvah of adding the additional Ari Miklat, the additional cities of refuge, with the coming of Mashiach. However, when the Jews entered Eretz Yisrael with Yehoshua, they did not have these lands of Keni, Knizi, and Kadmeni. Menashe, therefore, asked for two parts of the promised land. He wanted to straddle the Jordan, both sides of the Jordan. The side of the Jordan which was in Canaan, that was similar to all other Shvatim, similar to all other tribes. But he also wanted a part of the lands of the Keni, Knizi, and Kadmeni. This is on the east bank of the Jordan. And this he wanted because he wanted it as a preview, as a preparation, and as similar as possible that it can be to the ultimate Geula which will come through Mashiach. The difference between God, Reuven, and Menashe in the reason that they asked for the lands on the east bank of the Jordan is that God and Reuven wanted these lands for material reasons. Now to be sure, these material reasons were not against the Torah. This is consistent with Torah. However, they are still material reasons. Whereas Menashe did not have a material reason. The only reason why Menashe asked for these lands was purely to relate their inheritance to the ultimate Geula. The inheritance that they got in Eretz Canaan, they wanted should be as similar as possible to the ultimate Geula. As every issue in Torah has a lesson, a hira for each and every single person, the lesson that we can learn from Menashe is the great desire and yearning that we must have for the Geula. There are those that say that they have it good in Golos. They have no material reasons why to leave the Golos, God forbid. As far as they're concerned, they say, the Golos can continue for another 2,000 years. This idea is so outrageous even to think about it. How much more so to speak about it, to verbalize such words, is how much more so outrageous and unbelievable. Yet, no one takes them to account for such statements. How can people make such statements that they are ready, that they don't mind, God forbid, to remain in Golos for another 2,000 years? The reason why there is such a phenomenon is because those that have to exclaim Mashiach now, those that have to cry out that we want Mashiach, are themselves bashful and embarrassed to do it. And being that those that have to do it are bashful and embarrassed, and on top of that, they themselves wonder, why is it necessary to cry out Mashiach now? Why is it necessary to ask for Mashiach? So on the other end of the spectrum, it trickles down that someone can come up and say and make such outrageous statements. The lesson that we take from Menashe is clear. Although he had no material reason to want those lands, like B'nai God and B'nai Reuven. However, his only concern was that he wanted to do as much as possible to come to the ultimate Geula. He wanted to be then, already in what he inherited then, of Eretz Canaan, he wanted that to be as similar as possible. It should be a foretaste and a preparation for the ultimate Geula. And that was the reason that he asked for those lands. And as the lesson that we can learn from that is, that although that for material reasons one might think that he has it good, he can be learning, he can be davening, he can be performing mitzvahs and so on, but as long as a Jew is in Golos, he has to be restless. He cannot sit back. He cannot be complacent and tranquil and comfortable and smug in Golus. He has to cry out and demand and beseech God that we want Mashiach now. He has to do everything within his power to bring Mashiach, to hasten Mashiach, and through all these efforts in hastening Mashiach, we will merit the immediate revelation of Mashiach. It should be taken from the Yad Mamash, it should be immediately. The Sikha was from Shabbos Parshas Tzav, Shabbos HaGadol, Tavshin Mem Hei.